Welcome to Fronteras, a program that explores issues at the border and beyond through the lens of arts, culture, and history. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. A handful of Texas cities have their own Poets Laureate: Corpus Christi, Houston, McAllen, Dallas. One city was the first, San Antonio. San Antonio has had 7 Poet Laureates since Carmen Tafoya took the helm in 2012. They include Lori Ann Guerrero, Jenny Brown, Octavio Quintanilla, and Andrea Vocab Sanderson. Guerrero, Brown, and Tafoya have gone on to serve as Poets Laureate for the state of Texas. The 6th San Antonio Poet Laureate, Neftali de Leon, only served a few months in 2023 before he was removed from his post for including a Spanish language racial slur in an online poem he published in memory of Chicano scholar Robert Sintley Rodriguez. A year later, the city of San Antonio has selected Eddie Vega as its Poet Laureate, with a term to last through 2027. Vega is a poet, a spoken word artist, and an educator at Holy Cross of San Antonio, a Catholic college preparatory secondary school. He's the first high school educator to be named San Antonio Poet Laureate. Vega's latest collection of poems is called Somos Nopales. He also edited the 2022 collection, Asina is How We Talk. Vega joins us today to talk about his new position and why he's also known as the Taco Poet of Texas.
When I started going to the open mics and whatnot around town, I had several poems about tacos. So I started calling myself Taco Poet of San Antonio. And then I was somewhere and somebody says, no, you're bigger than San Antonio. You're the Taco Poet of South Texas. And then I was at an event. Vocab was reading my bio. And she said, no, you're the Taco Poet of Texas. And she declared it. So that kind of like, that expanded it more. And I used to have a blog about tacos, or eating tacos with one of my buddies, Teno Villarreal. And we called it We Talk About It. There's a book Amanda Rayo put together.
I think it's the Tacos of Texas.
Tacos of Texas, yeah. Tacos of Texas. So I'm in that book as a taco ambassador. And then yeah, it just went from there. But yeah, I do have several poems about tacos, not just tacos, but also taco culture, about having tacos with friends. Food poetry isn't just about like writing about food. It's actually more about, it's about culture. It's about family. It's about community. There's so much more there than just that, or whatever it is that we're eating.
So before we move on about poetry, I do need to ask you about tacos.
Okay.
Flour or corn, and what's your favorite kind?
Oh, that, see, that depends all on like the filling,
right?
You know, I don't. There's not a definitive. There are some mornings and some things like breakfast tacos to me are usually flour. That's the standard. For health reasons, I've been trying to go to corn. I don't know that if that is healthier, but it just feels like it is. So I'm going to go.
It's a little
with it.
Smaller too.
Smaller portion. I don't know.
And any kind of taco doesn't matter. You don't have a preference?
My favorite breakfast taco is actually a chicharron en salsa.
Oh.
And a close second, a chicharron con huevo, but it's got to be crispy then. And I really like when you order it, in Spanish, you say crispy.
All right. So, Eddie, let's talk about this road to the Poet Laureateship. You've been here in San Antonio. You are a native of the border in the Rio Grande Valley. And I know that there's an application process involved. Did you have a lot of voices of support of your nomination? How exactly does that process work? You submit your name and then what?
Well, I don't really submit my name. I didn't really apply. It's a nomination process. So some people reached out to me and said, we were interested in nominating you. Can you give us some more information about you? So I provide the resume and provide some works. And then they got to work on it. And one of the nominators actually said, well, this is, I know that you've done more. So I want, need you to write down everything that you've done in the last 10 years or whatever. So I had sat down to writing all that down. I kind of forget some of the appearances that I've made, places that I've read at. Ended up with 4 nominators. One of them was in secret. One was a former student who didn't tell me that they were doing that. But when I asked, well, how'd you get all the information? And he said, I'm an anthropologist. I know how to get information about people. So he got all that information together. And in the end, it went to a group of poets and writers who then sent on the names of finalists onto another group of past poet laureates. And I think they scored the applications from what I understand. And mine came up with a high score.
So I'd like to talk to you a little bit about how you teach your students. You said you even had a student who nominated you for your post as a poet laureate. What do your classes consist of? Do you teach poetry? Do you teach another subject? How do you encourage expression from your students?
Sure. I actually don't teach English or literature. I teach theology. That's what my degree is in. I teach at a Catholic school. And I use poetry in the classroom. And that's kind of one of my goals, is to have poetry more integrated into classrooms that don't have to be English classrooms or literature classrooms. So, for example, we'll do an acrostic poem to describe somebody, you write their name down vertically, and then you use those letters as the first letters of the first words in your poem. That's a simple one. I've had them do haiku about different subjects. Each line of a haiku will be a category, like different senses, and then end with an emotion. I'm having my seniors right now, they have an option of writing a monologue or a persona poem, which are basically the same thing. It's just two different forms of it, talking from the perspective of a historical figure. But I'm letting them use poetry, and I give them samples so they know what they're doing, but it's kind of integrating both in there. Truthfully, these are only like a few of the assignments throughout a year, so they're not doing poetry all the time. Poetry isn't just to be studied in your English classroom, but it's a mode of expression. I think that's what I enjoy about being a poet, is I'm not talking about rhyme schemes or rhythm structures or forms. I'm writing. And sometimes I do use those forms, but I'm writing and expressing. And I would like my students to know that this is one way in which they can express themselves.
So as a poet laureate, I know that the poet laureateship usually comes with a project. And I don't know if you already sort of know what that project is going to be. You have 3 years to develop it, at least. But do you maybe have an idea of what this maybe citywide project may involve?
Sure. I have ideas, but we haven't sat down with Department of Arts and Culture to set these all down and set some goals on dates and whatnot. I do have ideas of what – I have a lot of ideas, but I can only do one project. But I do want to be a poet laureate that's out there with the community, to have the community writing, to have the community listening. I think that's important. I think our libraries are very important. So maybe that's what our big project will be. It'll involve our libraries. I think we have 30 in the city. The Poet Laureate of Dallas, Joaquin C. Watanejo, or the previous Poet Laureate, he made a promise to visit every library in town, and I think that's a pretty good promise to do. I'd like to go to all of them to read, but not just by myself. I'd like for local residents of that library and local poets to also join me in having reading and discussion.
Eddie Vega is the Toco Poet of Texas and the new San Antonio Poet Laureate. Vega has published 2 poetry collections, Chicharra Chorus and his most recent book, Somos Nopales. When we come back, Vega says Somos Nopales addresses the Ansalduan concept of Nepantla.
That you are not de aquí ni de allá, right? You're not from here, you're not from there. You're stuck in the middle somewhere, and I'm from the Rio Grande Valley, which is the most middle you can think of.
Our conversation continues next on Fronteras. Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Eddie Vega is the newest poet laureate for the city of San Antonio. Vega is a high school educator teaching theology at Holy Cross. He's considered the unofficial Taco Poet of Texas. Vega is the editor of Asina is How We Talk, a collection of Spanglish poetry written by South Texas and borderland writers like David Bowles, Irene Lara Silva, and Carmen Tafoya. Vega's latest collection of poetry is Somos Nopales, which translates to We Are Nopales, or prickly pear cactuses. Like Asina is How We Talk, Somos Nopales is written how fronterizos, people from the borderlands in South Texas, talk. Un poquito de English here, un chorrito de Spanish there. The introduction to Somos Nopales reads angry and defiant. Vega references Chicana feminist scholar Gloria Anzaldúa in talking about Nepantla, the state of feeling like you don't belong, you are neither here nor there.
That's an element in the introduction, is the idea of being a Nepantlero, that you are not de aquí ni de allá, right? You're not from here, you're not from there. You're stuck in the middle somewhere. And I'm from the Rugen Valley, which is the most middle you can think of. I mean, that's where Gloria Anzaldú was from, too. This whole region of South Texas that is so close to Mexico that a lot of people speak Spanish, listen to a Mexican style of music, but then also navigate a world in English because the jobs and the schools are in English, and we have to navigate in that kind of a world. So we're both. Sometimes we look a little different, too, than what people think of as the quote-unquote typical American. But, you know, when we go back to visit our relatives in Mexico, they see us as being different. We're not Mexican enough for them either. So not American enough, not Mexican enough. And I think that's part of it. That's a huge part of the book. And I, you know, you mentioned the that sounded to be a little upset, and that this whole idea kind of started with a phone call from my dad where I was taking a nap. And, you know, I don't know about you, but when I wake up from a nap, I'm a little cranky. And I kind of wonder if maybe all my poems start out with being a little cranky about something, being unsettled and having to respond to it. And I think I was unsettled when I wrote some of these poems about what's going on in our community, in our culture.
But that introductory poem that you wrote about in that introduction, that is the poem that sort of starts out the collection. And mm-hmm. It really does address what I think most of us who are Latino face when we are filling out a census form. And this is something that we also get at doctor's offices. This is something that we get at the driver's license offices, where are you Hispanic? Are you Latino? And then there's another category. Are you white? Are you black? But there's nothing that shows you what you are. And if there's no other box for you to click, what do you click?
Right. Or worse, there is an other box. And then now we're othered. Now yeah. we're not one or the other. We're just other. My dad called and asked, "Well, what are we?" I'm like, "Well, what do you mean, what are we?" And I wasn't sure what he was asking. He says, "Well, I don't feel black and I'm not white. And I don't feel white either. Which one am I?" And I'm like, "I'm sure there's a category, Dad." And then I went and did the census myself, and there was no category anywhere. So yeah, that was the start of kind of like this collection of that inquietud, I guess, of uneasy feeling of, where are we? What are we? It's all wrapped up in there. And I think that the poems kind of hit that topic from here and there. And you know, in that poem, I also talk about Julian Castro. Julian Castro ran for president, is Ivy League educated, Stanford educated, on paper, you know, should be accepted. But got, I don't know, was it 0.4, 1.4 or whatever is percent of polling? And that, I think that's bothersome. What does it say? That he can't count either.
And sort of along those same lines of what we're talking about, of neither being from here, from there, you know, we have this blending of languages. We call it Spanglish. Other people call it Pocho. You write that way as well. And then you also edited a collection of poetry from writers from up and down the borderlands in South Texas. And so could you tell us a little bit about Asinas How We Talk?
Sure. I received a grant from Luminaria some years ago to put this book together. And that was in my proposal, was to collect poems of the Nepantla. And I was defining our particular Nepantla as the South Texas from San Antonio to the Rio Grande Valley over to Laredo and then to Corpus Christi. So poets had to either be from there or have a deep connection to that place. They could be diasporic, I guess, you know. And they had to be written in a Spanglish, using English and Spanish, sometimes in the same word, same phrase, because that's Asina, you know, the Asi is how we talk. That's how the people actually talk in this area. And I wanted to preserve that. And then also maybe thumbing my nose to the establishment a little bit, because this poetry is not going to be all English or all Spanish like they seem to require.
In your introduction, it's like, if you are a teacher, you're going to hate this book. If you're blah, 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 you're going to hate this book. You're going to hate this book.
Yeah.
Did you get a lot of people who hated the book?
No. I mean, or they haven't told me. If they have, they have, you know, they're probably the kind of people that would just ignore it and put it down and not buy it. Or they're like, what are these Tejanos thinking kind of thing. So yeah, then that's okay. But I have gotten a lot more from professors who are now doing what this new word that I learned, translanguaging, that our community does a lot to try to access a new language. There's a transition period when we're using both languages. what Carmen Tafoya, my mentor, also told me is that Chaucer translanguaged, and you came up with a new language when he wrote his Middle English. He was using French and English. So I think that writers and poets have been doing this for a very long time, and now we see that as classical and accepted. And I think that our language, our Tejano, our Spanglish, our Pocho, should be accepted as with a higher status and shouldn't be othered either.
A few months ago, we aired a show specifically on Caló, which is a particular dialect of Spanish. And you hear it a lot along the border. And it's also sort of this blending of words that may or may not make sense to even people who do speak Spanish. There is a lot of that in this book.
It's somewhat recent that I've learned about the Caló. I think that the Chicanos of the past, of the near past, were a lot more educated on calling it Caló and speaking a certain kind of Caló. I think that, yeah, I was speaking that without knowing that that had a name. And also that goes all the way back to Spain. The word Asina itself is incorrect Spanish, but it's not so much that it's incorrect, it's archaic. It's actually a form of así that was used centuries ago and somehow just stuck with certain people along the border and maybe even northern Mexico.
And so how were you able to convince a lot of these writers to take part of it? Because there are some pretty big names in here. You have Irene Lara Silva, who's a Texas poet laureate, Carmen Tafoya. You have a lot of local poets like Anthony the Poet. So did you have to get them to write specifically for this book, or did they have something that was already in their catalog?
Oh, yeah, that's the beauty of it. Well, it had to be new work. The grant said it had to be new work. But I knew that they could do it, and I knew that they already speak like this. They've already written like this. Irene has written like this. Carmen has written like this. Anthony the Poet speaks like this and writes like this. David Bowles, who does translanguaging like in four or five different languages,
yeah.
I think. I know that he does it. So that was kind of the easy part. And I had a call out to poets, and they sent me things. Anthony's, he had read that poem somewhere, and he might have even published it on Facebook, and I was like, that's the poem that I need. His is called Taco Cities USA, and it's about San Antonio, and it's about tacos, and it beautifully uses two languages. And I said, Anthony, this is the one. And he said, I think he had forgotten. He'd written it down. You know, so I had recovered it from him, and now he reads that all over town.
Again, going back to what you talked about earlier, which is when you were nominated and you were trying to track down everything that you've done in the last 10 years, you have these instances where you're putting stuff on social media and it's out there and you forget about it.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe you're doing a reading and it's a favor and you forget about it. So it's got to be really tough in order to just to try to remember and track all these things down.
Oh, yeah. And luckily for me, Facebook has a search option, and I was able to go back and search for different things. You know, I used to do a show called Dalí's Mustache at Imagine Books, and Imagine Books, of course, sadly closed. So I looked up Dalí's Mustache, and I'm like, oh my gosh, not only was I at Dalí's Mustache, I hosted it like twice, you know, so then I'm putting that down. But I look at my memories, Facebook memories, and I've written little poems in there sometimes, and I go back and I'm like, oh yeah. That looks pretty good. So then I have to copy and paste that into a document so that I can collect it further. And then some publishers don't like that it's web published before. So you kind of have to be careful with that. And some submissions will say, cannot have published previously on social media. So there's a little discrimination on that. We've been speaking them for years without them having been on paper somewhere. And if somebody's got a recording of it and they've published that recording, now you might get into some trouble with somebody who says when you submit, they'll say, oh, nope, you know, that has already been recorded in some way.
Well, you have, I think, a poem lined up to read from Somos Nopales or maybe from Asinas How We Talk. But I would love for you to go ahead and tell us what that is.
Sure.
And maybe some backstory.
Okay, sure. This is actually the title track of Somos Nopales. And it started with this idea, you know, with food. I was eating nopalitos somewhere, I think, and I'm looking at the plate, and I'm like, who thought of this? Who thought that we could eat this? You know, where did this idea come from? And it's not easy to make nopalitos. You know, you've got to, like, cut down the plant, but you got to take the spikes off. You got to boil it, you know, and take this film off of it. And there's a whole process to it. What industrious person or group of people said, you know, let's eat this plant that grows in the brush? What does that say about us? Also, this idea of how hardy of a plant that is.
And an nopal, in case people aren't wondering, it's a prickly pear plant.
Right, the prickly pear cactus. When I think of a plant, I don't think of a cactus. Its form irregular, no stem, broad leaves, or leaves that are limbs and spikes that are leaves, the oldest with a bark, but can we really call them trees? Fruit that might look like a pear but sweeter, adorned with impossible flowers. Cactus pokes out from under rocks, straddles a fence line, sprouts up next to old brick walls surrounded by asphalt and concrete, yet it was on the cactus that the eagle was found eating the serpent. On the plant that thrives in arid climates, whose paddles will cause you pain. On the plant that can be cut, discarded on the driest of ground only to re-root itself and rise again. Refuses to give up or go away. Refuses to die. El nopal is the toughest, most resilient plant on earth. And what does it say about us? Que comemos nopales. That we eat cactus. That we cut the spikes off like they never mattered. That we wash and rinse and boil and rinse and drain and saute. That we eat the ugliest shrub in the brushland. The plant, rejected, found amid stones, has become the cornerstone of our Lenten plate. The Lazarus of our garden. You say, ouch. We say, ike. You say, ooh. We say, dame más. You say, cactus. We sing, nopalitos, se venden nopalitos, nopalitos, se venden nopalitos, se dan para la cena, para el desayuno, con huevo y tortilla, nopalitos se venden, nopalitos se dan. And someone had to cut the spikes off, then wash it, then boil it, then wash it again, and someone had to figure that out, so stop saying that we're lazy. And raza, stop being lazy. We can wash and boil and wash those politicos all we want, but they won't get any more palatable. Cast the ballot that casts them out. Somos nopales, we are cactus. Let's prosper where we plant ourselves. Be a prickly pain in the system that thinks it can just handle us. Be the toughest, most resilient transplant on earth. Make roots along wall. Rise among stones. Flourish in wastelands. They might look away when they see us, but we cannot be avoided. They succeed only in giving us an unquenching desire to grow and grow. And grow and grow and grow and grow and grow and grow and grow. They tried to bury us. They didn't know that we were nopales. We are cactus. Somos nopales, and we refuse to die.
Eddie Vega reading Somos Nopales from his newest collection of the same name. Vega is also an educator and the author of the collection Chicharra Chorus and is editor of the collection Asina is How We Talk, all published on Flower Song Press. Thanks for joining us today for Fronteras. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Maria Navarro. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our editor is Fernando Ortiz Jr. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. Hear past episodes at tpr.org and on the Fronteras podcast. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.